This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Ewart. Coming up, we hear from the new European Union ambassador to the Pacific on climate change and China. The latest research on sorcery-related violence in the Pacific paints a poor picture of police efforts to tackle the problem. And we hear from the coach of the Vanuatu cricket team after a world record-breaking performance in Malaysia. Those stories to come, but first, in a week where Pacific leaders have been lining up to speak at the climate summit in New York, the warning contained in the latest report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is dire, to say the least. The report, called The Ocean and Cryosphere in a Changing Climate, says increased global warming is melting sea ice and glaciers at a faster rate, and the oceans are rising faster as a result. And as Evan Wasuka reports, as far as the Pacific Islands are concerned, it points to an accelerated rise in sea levels in the coming years.
It's in New York where the world's attention has been focused on the UN Climate Summit and the General Assembly. But it's across the world in Monaco where one of the biggest reports on climate change was launched this week by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change with some new and worrying findings for Pacific countries. Dr. Elizabeth Holland is a lead author of the special report on oceans and cryosphere. She's based at the University of South Pacific in Suva.
One of the things that we're much clearer about is how much of the heat is ending up in our oceans. So 90%, it's virtually certain that the ocean has warmed unabated since 1970. And it's taken up more than 90% of the excess heat in the climate system. We also know more clearly that the rate of ocean warming has more than doubled.
Fiji Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama described the report's finding as horror at the UN General Assembly.
Saying that the global average sea levels could increase by up to 1.1 meters by 2100 in the worst warming scenario. This is a rise of 10 centimeters on previous IPCC projections because of the larger ice loss now happening in Antarctica. This is heartbreaking.
Dr. Holland says even before sea levels rise, coral atolls would already be experiencing the worst impacts of climate change.
We already have studies that show that by 2030, some of these low-lying coral atolls will become uninhabitable. And that will be because of storm surge compromising the habitability of those islands. So our coral atoll nations will be facing tremendous hardship. What was once a once-in-a-century event has already and will become much, much more frequent.
So what can Pacific Islands do? Dr. Holland says Pacific nations can continue to carry out adaptation methods and to speak out.
So the Pacific nations need to keep doing what they're doing, raise their voices at the UN, push back, and lead by example.
One country that's taking the lead is Fiji, with Bainimarama speaking out at the UN General Assembly.
I urge everyone to read this report. It is from the top minds in their scientific fields. I say to any living in denial of the climate emergency, some of whom sit at the apex of certain governments, you readily listen to the scientists and take heed of the best research available in every other field of human endeavor. So you must not refuse to listen to the scientists on climate change.
Dr. Holland says what needs to happen now is for Pacific leaders to push the scientific findings through to leaders at the annual meeting of the United Nations Convention Framework on Climate Change at the end of the year in Chile.
What happens is that the nations that want to block action also block the entry of the science to inform the UNFCCC. So what we'll need is the leaders of our Pacific nations to step forward and insist that the science informs our actions.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Holland from the University of the South Pacific, a lead author of the latest report by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And the reporter there was Evan Wasuka. The newly appointed European Union ambassador for the Pacific, Sajiro Seem, has put a positive spin on Australia's role as a partner in climate change mitigation in the region. Despite Scott Morrison's failure to attend the UN Climate Summit in New York and the ongoing tensions between the Australian Prime Minister and Pacific Island leaders, Mr. Seem says Canberra makes a significant contribution when it comes to building climate change resilience. The ambassador has also praised Tonga, Tuvalu and Nauru for their handling of recent transitions in government, a situation he says that had the potential to be destabilizing for any or all three of the small island states. But while governance is important, he says it was crystal clear at the recent Pacific Islands Forum meeting in Tuvalu where the EU's focus in the Pacific right now should be concentrated.
All the bilaterals and all the meetings we participated in showed that climate change is perceived as the number one existential threat for the region. And indeed, as we're a good development partner, we endeavor to align our priorities on the priorities of the region. And certainly climate change and the fight against climate change is the number one priority, and it is reflected in our development programs in the region.
What then do you make of the, shall we say, fairly prickly relationship at the moment between the Pacific Island leaders and Australia?
What I can say is that we're very much willing and we're very happy to partner with Australia in the region to address the impact of climate change. We do that in several different joint initiatives, one of them being an initiative which was launched actually by France for climate adaptation and biodiversity in the Pacific. We co-fund that with the European Union, France, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. Also, we have a program which is very much in line with the priority given by Australia to plastic waste and waste in general. It's called Pack Waste Plus. So it's a regional program which addresses the issue of waste in the Pacific. And on resilience as well, I think we are very much in line with what Australia is trying to achieve in the region, which is to strengthen the capacity of these small island developing states, which are very fragile and very much exposed to the increasing impact of climate change, to withstand those consequences and to recover fast after a cyclone, for example.
Another big topic in the Pacific, as I'm sure you'll be well aware over the last few months, has been the question of China's stance. And we saw just a few days ago Solomon Islands, quickly followed by Kiribati, decide to turn their back on Taiwan after many years of diplomatic ties and switch allegiance to China. Now, as French ambassador to Fiji, you represented France in Kiribati. Did it surprise you that Kiribati made that decision?
It's not for us to comment on the choice made by other sovereign countries as to their diplomatic relationship. You know, the EU stands on the issue on a very constant position. We recognize the one China policy, which means that we have diplomatic relationship with Beijing. At the same time, we engage with Taiwan because we are like-minded partners and we share the same values and principles on democracy and human rights. And also, we recognize that they can have a positive influence and they can be good partners when it comes to development in the region. For the Solomon Island and for Kiribati, it was their decision. What I can say from the EU perspective is that we will keep working with these countries and see how we can respond to their particular needs. And I think their decision was inspired by their assessment that it would be better off establishing a diplomatic relationship with China rather than Taiwan.
Would the EU's view be that any Pacific Island country is perfectly entitled to take whatever assistance it can from wherever it can get it?
I think it's the role of any government in the world to have a good assessment of any type of situation. In this case, the network of diplomatic relationships. I mean, for us, it doesn't change the fact that we have diplomatic relations with China and that we have a good cooperation with Taiwan. It doesn't change the fact that in the region, we engage with the small island developing states to address the main challenges they face.
As French ambassador to Fiji, you were the French presence in Nauru, in Tonga and Tuvalu, and of course, all three of those small island countries facing significant changes at the moment. Two have had a change of government. One is about to have a change of prime minister following the death of Akalisi Pohiva. How do you view the situation for those three countries?
When you look at other parts of the world, when you have these events which might be destabilizing here in the region, I think that was very well handled by the countries themselves, and we had a very smooth and democratic transitions. Number two, of course, we will have to engage with these new governments. So I'll take advantage of my next visit to Tuvalu and to Nauru and to Tonga to meet the people. The challenges their countries face will not go away. It's always going to be about climate change. It's always going to be about sustainable development. It's always going to be about how to make the most of their ocean resources. But maybe there will be a change in the way they want to engage with us. And this is something I will have to assess when I meet their new leadership.
That's the recently appointed European Union Ambassador for the Pacific, Sujiro Seem. I'm Richard Ewart, and you're listening to Pacific Review. Researchers working in Papua New Guinea have found that it's members of a local community who are most likely to intervene in incidents of sorcery-related violence rather than the police or law enforcement officials. They've also found that a confusing legal framework makes it difficult for victims to face their accusers in court. And as Priyanka Srinivasan reports, now there are calls for the PNG government to provide better funding for anti-sorcery initiatives to strengthen the level of response at both grassroots and state levels.
Communities in Jawaka province in PNG have developed their own unique rules to settle sorcery accusations, accusations that all too often lead to torture, vandalism, and quite possibly killings. According to Miranda Forsyth from the Australian National University, village courts, made up of community leaders that handle customary issues, have been able to control rumours of witchcraft before they escalate into violence.
Once a person had been accused, then they would go to the police and to the village courts. There would be a mediation, and then the village court would make a preventative order, which would say that the people who had made the accusation would have to sign this order to promise not to make an accusation again. And then all together, they would have a ceremony, they would do awareness raising in that community, and that was a way of trying to ensure the ongoing safety of the person who had been accused as an alternative to prosecution.
Dr. Forsyth is part of a team of researchers looking at ways to improve interventions into sorcery-related violence. They have found community action, like what is taking place in Jawaka, are often the most effective. According to their work, in more than half of all cases, it's village leaders and family members that attempt to stop sorcery accusations from causing violence. And in only 13% of cases do police intervene when accusations first come to light. Fiona Hukula is a senior fellow at the National Research Institute in PNG and a lead researcher in this project.
Well, one of the key things I think that we see, we've found from our research, is the importance of community leadership to address sorcery accusation. It's the village leaders or community or family members that intervene when there's an accusation, and it's also the same people who attempt to stop violence.
Dr. Hukula says the important role of communities comes as police face significant obstacles in trying to find and control violence.
The criminal justice system faces some significant challenges in dealing with this issue, mainly in terms of the resource constraints and also geographical constraints. It's quite difficult for police to get to some very remote areas. There's also a lack of witness protection, which means that people are reluctant to give evidence to the police.
And there are further challenges when it comes to seeking justice for victims of sorcery accusations. In 2013, following a particularly brutal case of sorcery killings, the government responded by getting rid of the country's Sorcery Act, which had allowed accusations of witchcraft to be used as a defence in murder cases. Miranda Forsyth from ANU says this repeal unintentionally created confusion in what courts could do to fight sorcery-related crimes, and as a result, many of these cases do not make it into the justice system.
There was a lot of confusion as to what exactly does repeal mean. So in the interviews that we've done, a lot of people have talked about a new act called the Repeal of the Sorcery Act. There hasn't been straightforward messaging about what exactly that repeal meant.
And those cases that do go to trial feature male victims, who Dr. Forsyth says have the resources to fight the case.
When we were going through and looking at, well, which cases have actually been prosecuted and got to the stage of a conviction, most of the cases involve male victims. Although men and women are both accused, the impact of accusing a woman is greater. And so women have got less resources that they are able to draw upon in order to fight back.
The researchers are now calling on the PNG government to make good on their earlier promise to provide 3 million kina, over 1 million Australian dollars, to fund a national sorcery action plan. The action plan would help strengthen existing laws and also support grassroots advocacy.
One of the things I think I would like to see from this research is to see some of these community organisations better supported to carry out the very important work that they do in PNG.
The team's final research findings are expected to be presented in PNG in June next year as part of an international conference on sorcery accusation-related violence.
And the reporter there, Priyanka Srinivasan. Now, while Vanuatu and Fiji have made progress in banning single-use plastic bags, Solomon Islands have been lagging behind. But with the country gearing up to host the 2023 Pacific Games, activists are using that as motivation to spark a change in behaviour and attitude. They've started small but have high hopes of a nationwide change and a plastic-free Pacific Games. And as Evan Masuka reports, one educational authority isn't waiting. It's already taking the lead by banning single-use plastic bags in its largest school.
On the streets of Honiara, plastic rubbish is a common sight.
It is a problem for Honiara. It is overwhelming. If you look at all the streams, when it rains, you will see all the plastic bags ending up in the rivers and streams for Honiara.
Fred Patterson works for the Secretariat of the Pacific Environmental Program, SPREP, in Solomon Islands. Once in the waterways, he says plastics are being washed out to sea.
Which means that they are all going down into the coastal environment and into the marine environment. And with the current movements around the island, it means that a lot of this plastic waste get washed ashore onto all the different islands.
Activists are hoping that with the capital, Honiara, hosting the 2023 Pacific Games, national pride can help generate civic responsibility. Gareth Quitty is the coordinator of a group made up of non-government organizations.
At the moment, we have litter ordinance in the Honiara city, but not specifically to plastic bags.
Their approach is to go small, targeting behavior, starting with the central market.
And we're also going to try and convince the market vendors and the customers to, you know, use the eco bags. So we'll be out there with the eco bags that we have as well.
These are stronger bags that can be reused, brought in especially from Fiji. But Mr. Quitty acknowledges that it's a bit of a delicate dance.
We don't really have these eco bags sold in more shops here, so that will be one of the challenges. And the cost of the eco bags, if we sell them at a very high price, then people would not want to buy it, so they will still resort back to a plastic bag.
But SPREP's Fred Patterson says an alternative to plastics can be found in rural communities.
There's a lot of creativity and a lot of history for Solomon Islands that use a lot of people use biodegradable products in the communities. That could be transferred to Honiara, the use of local materials that are biodegradable from the ecosystems.
The Anglican Church of Melanesia is the largest Christian denomination in the Solomons. Its education arm is responsible for 17 schools.
There's a lot of plastic sailing from most of the Chinese shops here in Honiara. But there's a lot of challenge, and especially the attitude. Students, they still resort to the, like, throwing rubbish everywhere. So by the end of the project, students will develop some positive attitude of managing plastic bags.
Desmond Whiter is director of education for the church. One of its largest schools in Honiara, St. Nicholas College, is piloting a ban on single-use plastics as part of a UNDP project.
The idea to reduce plastic is to develop a good habit and attitude and value in the students to use plastic waste wisely so that it will lessen pollution and littering. If we do that, then it will lessen pollution and littering in the country.
Through the Plastic Free Schools project, they hope to create a change in behavior among the next generation of Solomon Islanders.
It is good to start it at the school level so that when they go out to the communities or to the homes, they will develop the habit of using or managing plastic bags wisely.
For SPREP's country manager, changing behavior is just one part of the solution to fixing Solomon Island's plastic problem. It's a major challenge, but maybe with a common goal and national pride on the line, Solomon Islands can clean up its act by 2023.
That's Evan Masuka reporting, and you're listening to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. The Vanuatu cricket team have ended the World Cup qualifying tournament in Malaysia with a narrow defeat to Qatar by just 7 runs, but it's their amazing victory over the hosts earlier in the week that has sent cricket fans around the world heading to their atlases to find out exactly where Vanuatu is. When the Pacific Islanders were bowled out for just 65, victory looked impossible, but 5 wickets from star all-rounder Patrick Matutava and 3 from Apollinaire Stephen saw them knock Malaysia over for just 52, to win the game by 13 runs. In the process, Vanuatu set a world record for the lowest total ever defended in what are called List A games, and interim coach, the former Australian One Day Player of the Year, Clint Mackay, says he's certainly never seen anything like it.
No, I haven't seen anything like it. It was extraordinary, to say the least. Obviously, the batting from both teams wasn't probably the best we've seen, but the bowling group responded beautifully, and I've never seen the discipline, and what the bowling group showed was outstanding. Just something we asked for, continuing to own the stumps. And it was one of those days that they kept nicking and we kept catching them. It was an amazing performance from the bowling group and backed up sensationally from the fielders.
And that's significant, isn't it? Because in previous games, it's catching really that's let you down and put you in this position where you weren't winning. Now the team has gone out there against impossible odds and proved what they can do.
Yeah, definitely. It was great. And sort of puts the belief in the team. You know, sort of Canada's been undefeated and won games convincingly all throughout the tournament. And I think if we hold our catches that first game, then our tournament's completely different. But that happens, and no one means to drop a catch. But probably put us on the back foot against them and probably took us a while to get back into the tournament. But really showed the belief that the boys have in their skill levels to go out and win a game for any position. So it was great to see, and a couple of bowlers have really stood up this tournament and once again got their just rewards.
One in particular, Patrick Mototava. I mean, he's done it more than once for Vanuatu, 5 for 19. I mean, that must have been pretty instrumental.
Yeah, he was outstanding. He spoke to the bowling groups before and said, well, you never know, but all we can control is just keep bowling our best ball and what will be. And Paddy had 60 balls and probably bowled 60 of his best balls he could bowl. He was outstanding, just the pressure that he built and relentless sort of line length that he held with some swing bowl, a bit of swing in the air and some good pace. And mate, he was outstanding. I'm sure if he continues that every time he plays, he's going to have a very, very successful bowling career.
How long was it after the game was over and the celebrations died down that you realised or somebody told you that you were in the record books?
Yeah, it was about an hour afterwards. We got back to the hotel and it all sort of came through, and yeah, it was a great feeling, a great bit of history for the boys, and the boys are quite excited. So if any time you create some history on the right side, it's very exciting times and something that everyone's going to remember. That's a win for the ages, really.
The level of attention that you're going to get on the back of this result, this could do wonders for Vanuatu cricket. There are people all over the world now trying to figure out where Vanuatu is and who are these boys who have broken this record.
Yeah, of course, and that's the whole thing, is that's continuing to grow the game in Vanuatu. And I think the biggest thing is hearing the reactions from people back home that Vanuatu is part of cricket history on the right side of the ledger. That's very exciting, and hopefully that continues to help grow the game in Vanuatu. We know there's a lot of talent in the country, and so they're continuing to develop that to make sure this is a generational game rather than just one of those things that people play for a bit of fun. It's come a long way in the last sort of 15 years, 20 years since it started taking its cricket journey, so it's continued to grow the game, and hopefully this performance continues to grow and this group grows and ends up being something special.
Clint Mackay, interim coach of the Vanuatu men's cricket team, on the line from Malaysia. And finally, it's not been a good Rugby World Cup so far for Fiji, with the team beaten by Australia, and then they suffered a shock loss to the unfancied Uruguayan team in the second of their pool round games. But ahead of their next match against Georgia, the Flying Fijians might just take some inspiration from a song written by one of their fans, Isia Vola Vola.
You know, we go to the church, they're talking about it. You go to the witch doctor, he's talking about it. Even seems like the coconut trees are talking about it. So I felt I wanted to write a song to support our brothers. I've been doing for 1.5 years now. I had to learn it to work in a resort. They say if you want a job, you have to learn how to play and write songs. So I wanted the job. I needed it, so I started playing. But now I'm back in my village doing farming, and I sing under the coconut trees.
And the song Isia has composed is called Fijians Fly, and the YouTube video, which he's posted after going to extraordinary lengths to record his performance out on a boat, is getting plenty of attention. So all is not lost for the Flying Fijians, with games against Georgia and Wales to come. And here's a taste of the song that might just lift them to new heights. You've been listening to Pacific Review. I'm Richard Hewitt, and as always, thank you very much for listening.
The entertainers, they finally arrived. A flesh or sick might blind your eyes. Well, be ready for the Fijian style. The world be blessed with your presence indeed. Come with your net and live with the fish. Jabi the glory is the king of kings. Sayonara, oh please help me please, eh. Have you ever seen the Fijians fly? With a speed and beat you with a smile. Have you ever seen?
Naka.